Mockingbirds don't do one thing but make music for us to enjoy. They don't eat up people's gardens, don't nest in corn cribs. They don't do one thing but sing their hearts out for us. That's why it's a sin to kill a mockingbird.
So this was an extract from the novel To Kill a Mockingbird, an American literary masterpiece published in 1960 and written by Harper Lee. So what did you think about this novel?
I was so happy rereading it because I had read it, I can't really remember when, but maybe 1 or 2 years ago. And it was so good rereading it because there's so many more things to rediscover. A great pleasure to reread. What about you?
Same thing. I think I read it about 3 or 4 years ago, and I remember that I liked it, but I didn't remember that it was this good. It was an amazing novel for me. I had an amazing time reading it.
Yeah,
and like you said, you rediscover things that you didn't remember. It's funny how we lose stuff from books.
Exactly.
Once we've read it, so it was really nice to reread to reread it. So what is To Kill a Mockingbird about?
So it's a story told from the point of view of a little girl nicknamed Scout. She lives in Macomb, Alabama in the 1930s. So Macomb is a fictional city, but or town rather. But it's a good representation of a town in the deep south in a context of segregation. Yes. We'll come back to that. So the real name is actually Jean Weese, but she doesn't like that name.
No.
She goes by her nickname. Everybody calls her that. She loves adventure and sees the world as a playground, basically. And with her brother Jem, at some point, she faces the unfair reality surrounding them when a black man called Tom Robinson is accused of raping and killing a white girl. Their father, the famous Atticus...
Yes. The wonderful.
So he's a lawyer and he agrees to defend Tom in spite of the white community's prejudice.
Yeah. So as you said, there is an important political background with this novel. So it takes place in the 1930s. So in the Deep South, segregation was really strong in this area. In the 30s, it was really strong in the whole country, but especially in the South. So you had Jim Crow laws, and there was a lot of limitations regarding social, political, and economic possibilities for black people during that time.
Yes, and the general racism that goes with this, yeah.
And it's also the period of the Great Depression. Sorry. So it affected the entire population, but especially farmers, and Macomb is surrounded by farms, so it's a really poor town. And I don't know if you remember, but Scout had a discussion with her father, and I think he says something like, "We are poor, not as poor as some people like farmers, but we don't have money."
Mm.
So
yeah, and he explains why. It's because the people around who are almost all of them, well, most of them farmers, can't pay using money.
Yeah, they give him other things.
Yeah, so they give him food, they give him chopped wood and so on. So, but this means that they don't lack anything, but they don't have as much money as a lawyer could have. And there's also a family in the novel called the Cunningham who are a good representation of this family of farmers who really struggled to live in the context of the Great Depression.
Did this aspect made you think of the Grapes of Wrath, the poor farmers?
A little, but not as much, because it's only mentioned in passing, so it's just the background of the story, but it's not at the forefront, because that's not the point in To Kill a Mockingbird. It's not about being poor or rich. It's more about racial prejudices and social standings.
Yeah.
But not with regards money.
Yeah. So this book was written during the civil rights movement. There's no mentions of it in the novel, but it was written in at the end of the 1950s, I guess.
As far as I remember, Harper Lee went to her potential publisher in 1957 with a draft, and they worked on it, and it was published in 1960.
So this was a hugely successful book when it came out. Millions of copies were sold, and it won the Pulitzer Prize. So one of the most prestigious awards in the US. And interestingly enough, it's one of the only books that she published. She peaked really early in her career.
That's right.
And never really find other inspiration in this story.
That's right. Mm-mm.
So there are a few characters, very interesting characters, all in their own way. So what is special about this book is that it's told from the point of view of a child, like you said.
Mm-mm.
So this was probably a risky choice because it's not a children's book.
It's not, absolutely not. That's right. It was a risky choice, but I think it's also what makes people love the novel, is that we get that 6-year-old point of view. Well, she's between six and eight or nine. I can't remember really at the end.
I can't remember either.
So she grows during the time span of the novel. And we have her way of seeing the world, which is sometimes really funny and anyway, always very fresh.
Yeah, I love, there's a whole comic bits that comes back in the novel where she doesn't want to go to school. And she keeps trying to negotiate with her father.
Yeah.
And she gives him all sorts of reasons why she shouldn't go to school. And those passages are really funny.
Yeah, but I mean, we understand her because...
Definitely.
Her teacher.
Yeah, oh my God, she's not
quite
a good
something.
Teacher.
Because she doesn't like it when Scout tells her that she already knows how to read. Because she's not supposed to know how to read at that at her age, and her teacher is not happy at all about it. And
she tells her she needs to stop because it's gonna limitate her in her learning if she already do that. Yeah. If she already does that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, she was not a very good teacher.
Mm.
You have a lot of humorous scenes in the novel, especially in the first part.
Mm.
The language, all the shenanigans that the children get into, especially with, they have a rather mysterious neighbor that they are very intrigued about.
Yeah, we'll come back to him, but it makes for really funny passages because they get frightened just by themselves.
Yeah.
They imagine all sorts of things and really nothing happened, but... Yeah. Because we follow her point of view, we get that sense of fear that they get themselves. Yeah. So she's not the only child in the story. There's her brother, Jem, who's 4 years older than her. Yeah. They go to the same school.
Yep.
Except towards the end when he goes.
Yeah. But he doesn't want her to come and talk to him at school.
No, because she's a girl.
Yeah.
So he shouldn't be seen talking to his little sister. Third child in the story is Dil.
Yep.
So their friend, he's a little older than Scout, but younger than Jem. And he's a boy who stays every summer at the place of a relative in Maycombe, in a house that is close to the Finch families.
I think they're neighbours on the left.
They're neighbours. Like,
because they just need to cross the edge.
Probably, so it's not clear who his family is because...
Mm-hmm. He has lots of fathers.
He has lots of fathers, so even Scout has trouble keeping track of who is who. And so apparently he tells all sorts of different stories about his family, so we never understand who he really is. So that's it for the kids. Now, concerning the adults, biggest character, obviously, is Atticus Finch, the father. So he's a widower, and he's rather old already. He's in his 50s.
Yep.
He's a lawyer. He's poor, as he tells Scout, but he's always calm.
Yeah.
he is portrayed as this fair lawyer who always wants to hear both sides of the argument, trying to balance the elements that he gets to make a decision. And he teaches his children never to see only the bad in people. So that's an... Well, all in all, he really looks like this role model, not only for the young narrator, but also for, I think, generations of readers.
And he's very forward-thinking in terms of education, especially with Scouts, because at the beginning of the book, he pretty much lets her do whatever she wants. Like, she can play with the boys and tumbles and things like that, to a certain point, because then he calls his sister to come and live with them to try and teach Scouts how to be a lady, quote unquote. Because we have to remember this was in the 1930s, and so women were supposed to be
exactly
a certain way.
First of all, Scouts was wearing dresses.
Scout doesn't do.
But he only gave in because his sister almost harassed him on the topic, arguing that it's about the Finch family's reputation.
Yeah.
Not to let Scout just run around in trousers. So yeah. Another adult figure in the neighborhood, although it's not clear who he is, because he is that mysterious person, is Boo Radley.
Yeah.
So Boo is the nickname given by the kids.
Yeah.
And his real name is
Arthur?
Arthur,
I think. Yeah. I just realized that why they call him Boo.
Yeah, because
they're scared of him.
Yeah,
that's so clever.
Yeah. So the story, the background that we have on Boo Radley is that as a child, he had trouble with the law. He was apparently almost sent to a reformatory school, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
And his family took him out of this school and kept him home unseen.
Yeah.
And that's why the children imagine all sorts of things about him.
That he eats children and things like that.
Yes, there's also gossip about the way sometimes he just all of a sudden gets very violent.
And
I think I remember something about a pair of scissors that he could have used to
stab his father or something like that. Yeah.
So that's what the children imagine about Boo. And again, something that we get through the eyes of this little girl.
I think especially Scout realizes at one point in the novel that he's not, because they keep getting those little presents hidden in the tree. And I think she realizes that it might be from him. And I think her opinion changes a little bit, that she realizes at one point that maybe he's not that scary and maybe he's, he could be friendly.
We can sense that evolution.
Yeah.
But it appears quite late in the narrative, I think. Not in the first half, anyway. I don't think so.
Because the presents happen in the first place, in the first part.
The presents happen in the first part, but I'm not sure that the children realize that it comes from Boo.
Oh, really? Because I thought they realized it when his brother put cement in the hole in the tree. And because he tells them that it's to save the tree, and she asks her father, who tells her that this will basically kill the tree. Well, anyway.
Well, that's interesting. Well, if you guys
have
a better analysis or have the page nearby, just let us know in the comments on Instagram what you think about this scene. Does Scout realize that early that Boo is not that scary? Let us know. Another important character among the adults of To Kill a Mockingbird is Calpurnia. So she's actually a black woman. She takes care of the home and of the children. So because Atticus is a widower, there's no one to run the home when he's at work and when the children are at school. So this is her function. And so she has a very important part in the kids' education as well. Which is why Jean Louise is this colorblind person that is mentioned in Ghost at a Watchman. Another important character. She seems like a stern woman, but she can also be very tender, with the children. So great character as well. Okay, another character among the adults in this novel is Tom Robinson.
Yes.
So Tom Robinson, the black man accused of raping a white woman in the neighborhood. And he didn't do it.
No.
But it's his word.
Against hers.
Against hers.
Yes.
And he hasn't got any witness on his side. No. Only against him, the girl's father's testimony. Knowing that the girl's father is a man who is both feared and despised. So somebody who is really difficult.
Yeah.
But still, it's the 1930s in the Deep South, and Tom Robinson is accused, and it's his word against the black, the white people.
Yeah, which brings us to the second part of the novel, which kind of turned into a courtroom drama, because we witness through Scout's eyes the trial. So Atticus is designated as his lawyer. And so everyone in town basically goes to the courtroom to witness the trial. And it felt, to me, it felt like everyone in this courtroom knew that he didn't do it.
Yes.
Especially after, I don't remember her name, but the...
The victim.
Yeah, after her testimony, I think you could, I think everyone realized.
Well, yes, they, even if they didn't know it before the beginning of the trial, they quickly understood it by the question and the remarks made by Atticus.
Yeah, the way he questioned both her and her father was brilliant.
Brilliant. I thought. And also, it's a scene that is quite sad as well, because actually the girl was not the victim of Tom Robinson.
No, she was the victim
but
of
rather
her father.
Yeah. And so you both realize in this scene how, well, I think that's one of the other themes in To Kill a Mockingbird, the issue of social classes and of also relationships between people in power, whoever they are, and the others who, well, who are not really in full.
Yeah, because the hostility towards Atticus from both the father and the daughter was thick. Like there were, and I don't think it was because he was Tom's lawyer, but I think it was because he represented an authority and, like you said, power and maybe money.
Yeah. And also because they represented the community. Because
they're very much outsiders.
They live in this area where they're really outside of the town. So yeah. And so yes, that's part of the trial scene. And so, as you said, it's really brilliant on the part of Atticus how he questions and shows the way it was impossible for Tom Robinson to be the culprit, because Tom can't, well, I think he can't use one of his arms anymore.
The left one, I think?
Yes.
Because he was in an accident.
He was in an accident. Yeah. And so Atticus was really cunning enough to show that it really required someone with both arms and really powerful to do this. And then when he showed that Tom couldn't use his left arm, it really proved to people that he wasn't the one who did it.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
Yeah.
The outcome of the trial is not in favor of Tom Robinson, although there's an appeal and...
And I think, if I remember, they said that the discussions took, I think, a lot of time.
Yeah.
And he said, because we'll talk about that in a minute, but Scout is very disillusioned, about the verdict, but he said that the fact that they even had a long discussion about it was a victory in
a new step in a way.
Yeah. So yeah, the verdict is very much the loss of innocence, the loss of innocence for Scout, because they witness the trial, as we said, and because Atticus' argument, there's no argument to have after he proved Tom's innocence. And I think as a child, how can you even think that the outcome will be anything other than the truth coming out?
It's not logical.
Yeah. And so when he is pronounced guilty, she's very, disillusioned. Mm. She can't believe that they would do this.
Exactly. So that's one of the other, I think, really interesting and touching things also in this novel is the coming of age aspect of this novel. She's not very old at the end of the novel, but yet, as you said, we can seem to get this moment when the kids realize that they don't live in a perfect world.
No.
At least not in a fair world. Yeah. So and that's an important aspect.
And it's interesting because Atticus gets a lot of heat for defending Tom Robinson from the town. And he gets threatened. And there's this scene that when you... that seeing it through the eyes of a six-year-old, just that it was so tense.
Yeah, 12 or 20. Yeah. I can't remember how many men, but there were a good group of white men who came at night to see Atticus, who was standing guard in front of the prison.
So I think they were there to kill Tom Robinson.
They were there basically because they wanted to kill Tom Robinson. And so Atticus was here making sure, he expected it.
Yeah.
And he was making sure that nothing was happening to Tom.
And she saw it because she describes it as a mob of people.
Exactly.
And I don't know, it was so tense. And then when she stepped up to protect her father, and that's what...
So beautiful scene as well.
Yeah,
because that's what stopped the man. There is this big tension that is built. You can sense that something is going to happen and something not nice at all.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's this anticlimax where the little girl arrives and says something very simple.
Mm.
I can't really remember what she says.
Does she talk about one of the men's son that she helped? You know, they invited him to dinner.
Exactly.
Is it?
I think it's one of the Cunninghams, actually.
That's probably...
So, because at school they had realized that one of the boys didn't have anything to eat for lunch. And so Scout invited him over to her place to have lunch with them. And she finds one of the men who is the boy's father, and she talks to him about it, asking whether he will allow his son to come back to their place.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the man... I think is really taken by this little girl's innocence.
I think he becomes a father again and not just an angry man.
Exactly. And I think that I remember that he bends down or crouches to talk to Scout. And that's where the tension really decreases.
Yeah.
And the men then decide that, okay, they're just leaving.
Yeah, good thing they followed their father.
Yeah, right. Although Atticus was quite scared when he saw the kids arrive, because he was, he really feared that something might happen.
Yeah.
Nothing happened, but that's another beautiful scene as well. Another scene that I love in this novel is in the courtroom when Atticus exits because they are going to have to wait for the jury to talk together and decide on a verdict. He exits. And all the black people present in the courtroom stand up. And one of them tells the kids, stand up.
Mm, right.
Your father is passing.
Yeah.
And that's another, gorgeous scene.
Yeah. Another scene that I like that I thought was kind of funny is when they have to stop the trial because somebody tells him that the kids are missing.
Yeah,
they're actually in the courtroom. So I thought that was funny.
Mm. So, yes, that's a good representation of all the different atmospheres that you have in this novel. Sometimes it's very funny because you have the kids' lives.
Yeah.
At other times it's really tense and sad. But then it's not comic relief, but there's some sort of relief thanks to the kids' intervention. So... Yeah, that's why I think that's one of the reasons why this novel is Yeah. So much loved. Okay, do you have a favorite aspect in this novel?
I think I really like, I really liked the courtroom drama and the whole thing about what was happening in the South at that time. And I thought that was interesting. And I really liked this time around, I really liked seeing Scout in the humor that she brings as a kid. And I don't know, the whole scenes where she tries without any success to persuade her father that she doesn't need to go to school. I thought that was so refreshing and something that we probably all have done when we were children. So I thought it was really, really good. What about you?
I think there are two things that I really love in this novel. The part Atticus plays in the courtroom and this speech that he gives at the end, just before the jury has to withdraw to think about the verdict. It's packed with American values of equality before the law. I mean, all sorts of value that are beautiful and great, but that was so difficult to really make real. And the contrast between these ideals and the reality is really strong and gives a lot of food for thought.
Yeah.
So that's one of the aspects that I loved. I also loved the way the kids realized that this mysterious man that they had imagined turned into some sort of monster is actually someone who has always been here in the background
watching
for them.
Yeah. He becomes their savior at the end.
Exactly.
That was really beautiful too.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that makes for another really striking scene. When the kids are attacked at night, they are almost killed.
Yeah.
But in fact, their attacker is killed.
Yeah.
And it's only later, I mean, I think it's in the morning following the attack.
He was in the room with when Jem. But it's so funny because she doesn't talk about him first. And so you realize that it was there all along.
That's it. So yes, that's in the night after the attack that they see him.
Yeah.
And that's another really beautiful and very tender scene because it's as if Scout was meeting one of her best friends.
Yeah.
Because she talks to him just as she were talking to an equal.
Yeah.
It's the first time she sees him, the only time, we are told. Yeah. And she talks to him as if they'd known each other for a long time, which is the case.
Yeah.
Because that's, I think, when you realize that probably Scout had known it for some time, that he was the one giving them gifts and so on. So yeah, I think that my two favorite aspects is Atticus trying to defend American values and on the other hand, Scout realizing that being different doesn't make you bad.
Yeah. So would you say that this book is one of your top 100 books?
Definitely.
Yeah, me too.
And I think that's a book that I'm going to reread regularly because I was not someone who was in favor of rereading books.
Me too, yeah.
Because there are so many books to read, so many great books to read, so many great books that keep being published.
Yeah.
And I used to think that, oh, come on, there's far too many things to read out there, so let's not waste our time rereading things that we already know. But then rereading Brideshead Revisited, rereading Rebecca, rereading To Kill a Mockingbird made me realize that rereading a book makes you get much more from this and you always see things in a different light. And so I think I'm one for rereading books now.
Yeah, I completely agree. So this year I've reread a few books and it made me realize why I love those books in the first place. It made me rediscover some aspects that I didn't realize. And it also made me realize how much we forget after reading a book. And so, yeah, I think I'm going to do much more rereading this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's true that reading new stories, finding new ways of thinking about important things is great, but rereading a book keeps making you think.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't reread that many books, but rereading a book is always an excellent experience. So yeah, definitely a reread. I'll reread it again, and definitely in my top books list.
So when we announced on Instagram that we were going to do a podcast episode on To Kill a Mockingbird, we had a few questions about Go Set a Watchman, which is what I think we can call the sequel of this book. So we decided that maybe it would be interesting to read it. And boy, was it an interesting read.
It was. So we decided to record a special episode on Go Set a Watchman. And so that's the next episode that we will publish in a short time.
Yes. So stay tuned to hear the rest of our discussion about Harper Lee.
Hey, not so fast. Do you know what would help a lot? It's if you would leave a 5-star rating or even a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That would enable us to help other readers find their own favorites. That's it for today. Bye.